sir, the possibility of successfully navigating an asteroid field is approximately 3,720 to 1.
Never tell me the odds.
I'm Pete Mitchell. He's Peyton Jones. And this is the Church Planner Podcast.
Hey, Church Planner, this is Pete Mitchell.
And this is Peyton Jones.
What are we supposed to do next? I can't even remember.
And you're listening to the Church Planner Podcast.
Welcome, everyone, to this is nothing but high-quality podcasting.
It is. It's like the real Ghostbusters.
You know, when you see all these fancy podcasts on the internet, right, it's all video now, right? And they're like, nice little studios.
No.
And then here's you and me.
OG.
We got our blurred out background. It's us. We're like, eh, you know, listen, don't really care.
It's OG. This is how we did it 13, 14 years ago. And we're still doing it that way. One day me have nice studio, but have you noticed my camera is a little bit better?
No.
Busy? Really? I don't look 4K HD.
You do. It's amazing, actually.
Why thank you. It still has some of my blemishes blurred out because I have a lot of them.
But, you know, I had to turn on that filter on Zoom too, because when I turned it off, I was like, oh,
yeah. Guy? My bald head has all these sunspots. I'm like, oh my gosh. You know, like, what happened there? I was a guy who never wore a hat. I was the bald guy that never wore a hat ever. Cause you know, my bald head was power. It's like a sign of power. When you're a bald man, you're like, yeah, you know, take that, take my baldness.
Well, for me, I never wore hats because I liked my hair and I was like, one day it's going to be gone. And so my kids the other day, they're like, you always wear a hat. I'm like, yeah, for two reasons. My hair is going white. And two, I look younger. I'm like, my vanity's kicking in. So I'm wearing a hat.
You look younger when you wear a hat. Not just you. I mean, all
like people in general. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. You ever noticed that you've never, ever seen the edge from U2 without a hat? He's either got a beanie on.
Yeah, I was going to say, it's always a beanie though, but that's almost like his
trademark. Or a do-rag. He wears a do-rag a lot, too.
I'm not into music enough to see him with the do-rag.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, he's always wearing a hat, so you know he went bald young.
Oh, is he bald? Is that why he's wearing a hat?
Yeah, he's bald. I mean, he's not bald. He's got hair, but he's got a giant bald spot that he's covering up.
Right.
Yeah. Well, man, what's going on with you? I mean, I got kind of some news from you this week in a group text.
What was the news?
Something about a house, right?
Well, but how many times have we tried to move in the last year and a half?
Oh, like, so it's not happening. It's an aspiration.
Well, we've got an offer accepted, but we've had two offers accepted in the past that didn't work out because
you got to sell your house.
Because I got to sell my house.
Gotcha.
So, I mean, the difference is now the market's loosened up a lot. There's a lot of pent up anxiety of people who want to move and couldn't over the last couple of years because everyone was scared of interest rates and whatnot. So I feel really good that we're going to be able to sell our house. Plus the house that we're buying between you and me, like, don't share this with anybody.
Okay. I'll just keep it between us, you know, in the podcast audience.
Between you and me, we're getting it for a steal. And I'm like, look, I can actually afford to lose money on my house and still not have my mortgage go up because I'm buying a house at such a great price.
Is it smaller? Is it location? Like, what is it about?
It's location. The reason why it's cheaper is its location. Well, the reason why
it's country?
What's that?
Out in the country a bit?
Yeah, it's about 20 minutes from where we live, maybe 25 at most. But so it's in a city called Melissa. And
wait, isn't that where my favorite restaurant in the world is?
No, that's McKinney.
Oh, okay.
But it is, but it's an acre and a half. Technically it's 300 square feet smaller. However, it has a casita, which isn't counted in the square feet. And that's like another 800. So it's, I think it's bigger than our current house. So I'm like looking at it going, the closest gym is too far away. But because of the casita, I'm like, dude, I'm getting a home gym again and I'm working out there. Cause in California, I worked out.
Fancy people. What's a casita?
So, you know, it's a separate unit. Like, think of a mother-in-law unit on the property. Yeah. So, like in California, I worked out in my backyard, as you know. But the problem is in Texas, it's too stinking hot in the summer and it's too stinking cold in the winter. Mm. But if I got a little casita, I'm like, boom.
Nice.
I'm going to work out in my casita.
That's nice.
And no, my daughter's like, well, then I'm going to use it as an art room. And Luke's like, I'm going to use it as a music studio. And I'm like, I don't care. Because in the morning, you guys are at school and it's my gym.
That's amazing. Nice.
Yeah. So, I mean, we'll see. We'll see. Who knows, right? I still got to, my house has got to sell. So, you know, we'll see. I will say this. So I was talking to our good friend Vinny yesterday on the phone. And Vinny is a former church planner, and he'll probably go back to it. But right now he's in a season where he's doing real estate and he's killing it in real estate. And yeah. I don't mean like he's just getting by. I mean, he is freaking killing it. Like,
yeah,
I don't even want to say on here because it's not cool. But oh, my gosh, dude, this guy is going to outdo me by like 3X. On my best year, like he is just killing it in real estate. And so he and I were talking yesterday because I'm like, hey, dude, give me some pointers on how to sell my house. Because he does all these videos. Like he'll post the videos in our group chat.
Yeah.
And they're funny videos. And he goes, well, let me tell you about the video I wanted to do. But I can't because, you know, my real estate license, I'll get fined. You know, I could get, he goes, I'll get, because I'll get, what do they call it? Canceled. He goes, I'll get canceled so quick.
Really?
Yeah, because he's like, I want to do a video that says, hey, are you ready to leave communism for freedom? Like, he runs these ads, these video ads, and he'll run them for his properties that he's selling in New York, in California, and places where people are moving to Florida.
Yeah.
And he goes, I go, yeah, but does that just get you more buyers? Like, I want to actually sell my house. He goes, I actually sold one of my houses that way, sight unseen. Like, they didn't even come down to see it, and they bought it because of the video.
Really?
So he's like, I really want to do it, you know, where I'm talking about the communism bit and all that. He goes, you can totally do it. And I'm like, you know what? I was telling my wife this morning. I'm like, I'm going to do that. I'm going to put on my cowboy hat. I got this Texas flag collared shirt that's freaking just over the top. I'm like, I'm going to do one going, you ready to leave communist California? Are you done with Gavin Mussolini? I'm like, you know, I'm just going to go off on it. Come by my house. I'm a former Californian, and I know how great this is. And I know you're wondering, why is he leaving the house that he just bought and going somewhere else? It's because I've gone full redneck, and I'm going to the country now.
Are but you do for sale by owner?
We got a flat fee broker.
Okay.
Because I need it in the MLS and all that stuff, and they do all the negotiation. But my own personal opinion, because you know this, I've worked with real estate agents for 15 years.
Yeah.
I mean, literally, I've trained over 100,000 real estate agents, and I don't mean to offend the real estate agents that listen to our show, because I know we got a bunch. Like, I know Bo's a real estate agent, Vinny's a real estate agent. I've told this to Vinny. He knows how I feel about this. But honestly, listing agents are not worth the money. Like, Vinny's one of the exceptions, because he actually does stuff. What does every other listing real estate agent do? They stick it in the MLS.
Yeah.
I mean, that's, give me 3%. Here, I'm sticking it in the MLS.
Right.
So, okay. You know, what am I using you for? Like, this doesn't make any sense. I'm literally going to pay you, you know, $20,000, $30,000, $40,000, depending on, you know, how much your home is for you to stick it in the, like, that doesn't make any sense. So for me, I'm like, look, I am a real estate agent. It's not that I've ever sold real estate. That's just, I am one. I'm technically, I'm a great test taker, as I like to say.
Yeah.
And I'm like, what's the point? Like, I no one has shown me any benefit at all. So I did hire a broker, but the broker is just a flat fee broker, right? They're like, look, we do all your negotiations. We put it in the MLS. We make sure that you're all compliant with the laws, which is the key thing, right? Like, I just want to be compliant.
Yeah.
And really what, you know, really sells the house is the price and the condition, right? The price and the presentation. And so, you know, what a good real estate agent will do is they'll be in charge of the presentation, meaning when people show up, you know, how it looks, all that kind of stuff, the experience that they have, because people buy emotionally, especially on their house, right? They like, this is the place I want to live. This is the place I want to raise my kids. You know, that's what is selling. So a good real estate agent will work with you on that stuff. Most of them don't, right? Because again, most of them are just like, hey, great. You know, we listed in the MLS. We're great. And the price is really determined by the market more than anything else, right? You just, if you list it too high, you're just being stupid because no one's going to come see it. They won't have the presentation.
Right.
So you got to list it right as far as price is concerned. But at the end of the day, you know, you're going to get what you're going to get because that's what the market determines it's worth. So, you know, I'm just like, for me, so we're not doing for sale by owner, but it's kind of like that in the sense that I got a lot more control over it. And I'm like, dude, I'm just going to go for it, right? I'm going to do some of the Vinny style videos, but I think I'm going to focus on communism and focus on people in Orange County trying to move to Texas.
Yeah.
You might see some of my videos out there.
All right. I want to see them. I want to see them. That'd be fun.
And I'm going to be putting them in our chat group because I'm going full cowboy.
Come on.
Full cowboy. Wonder,
are you gonna say things like wee doggy and.
Oh, yeehaw. Bet, baby. It's going to be great.
So good.
That's be great.
So come on. I want to see.
I figure too, what's the worst that happens? My house doesn't sell and I stay in it. This is literally like Vinny and I were talking about it. And he goes, and so I'm telling him all about the house. And I go, you know, we just had our pool resurfaced and, you know, hardwood floors. And I mean, I go, to be honest with you, this is the nicest house I've ever lived in.
Mm.
And he goes, why are you selling? And I'm like, because I want land. Like,
yeah,
I live in... I make the joke all the time. I moved from Orange County, California to Orange County, Texas.
Yeah.
Now it's not named Orange County, but it's the same thing. Like it's right. The same, except it's clean. The schools are freaking cathedrals. Yeah. Public schools are more like private schools in Texas.
Wow.
The homeless isn't a problem. Like you don't have.
You just can't go outside.
Tent cities. Oh yeah. No, people, they freaking play football in this crap. Like dude. Now I'm driving. And if it's 75, I catch myself, I kid you not, turning on my seat heater. I'm like, oh, dude, this is too cold. It's 75.
Are you serious?
I'm totally serious. Like, you get adapted like that. And I'm like, oh.
That happened in Wales.
Did it?
I big time, you know, got acclimated to just cold all the time, you know? And this is crazy. I would wear shorts and sandals because when I moved from Orange County, I moved over there and at first I couldn't handle it. And after time, I just started wearing my shorts and sandals year round again.
Right.
When I
get used to it.
Yeah. I mean, I remember coming back in the first year and we're up in Julian in California and there's snow on the ground. I'm walking around in my shorts and sandals. And Andrew's like, that's not normal. And I'm like, I know. But yeah, you do acclimate. Well, I got some stuff to share. Speaking of moving.
What's going on?
Our church.
Oh, you're moving to Texas?
Huh?
You're moving to Texas? You're moving into my casita?
No, but my church plant moved out of the house or houses because we're bouncing around three different. We're in the Tri-City area of North County, San Diego. And we've been Vista, Carlsbad, and Oceanside is Tri-City. And right where those three cities meet is kind of where we meet. And so we just started meeting at a church called New Song. Back in the 80s, there was a church growth guy named Hal Seed. Outreach Magazine came out of his church, DCPI, Dynamic Church Planning International. He had spawned like all these ministries. And he's still actively pastoring the mothership. Well, he actually spawned three church plants years ago, and they recruited some of the most incredible church planters. But one of the properties they acquired, there was an old Southern Baptist church right near my house, and that is now New Song Carlsbad. And they've been so gracious to rent this thing out to us for like a steal.
I remember you telling me.
Yeah.
I think we talked about it on the podcast, actually.
We did. And so we met in there last week, a week ago Sunday. We walked in. We said, we're not going to do a service or anything like that, which our service is not your typical service anyways. But what we did was we decided that we were going to go into the three rooms, the main room. So there's what they would call the sanctuary, the foyer, and then the fellowship hall. And so I walked in and everybody met in the sanctuary. And I said, this is the last time you'll ever sit in this room in rows. This is what the Lord's going to do in here. And then we moved into the foyer. This room's super important. You just think this is the passageway into where we're gathering. But this is actually the place where people's lives start to change. And you need to think about it that way. The conversations you have, the welcome you give, you know, yada, yada. And then we went into the fellowship hall. And everyone's like, we need to meet in here. It's smaller. We're not a big team of people. And they were like, we'll get swallowed up in that other room. So let's go into the fellowship hall. So we did. So last Sunday, we went in there. We had a bunch of cakes. It was kind of like Pillar and Refuge Long Beach had a baby. And what we did is we...
you know how many times you use that? It's like a Transformer and a GoBot had a baby. It's like a, I mean...
It's a mashup. It's the love child of both. But, you know, it's funny because every church plant is different, right? And this one is no exception. Like each time you birth a church plant, it's mission's going to dictate model. So what we decided last week, because I tried doing like the preach 30 minutes, I don't know what it is, man, but it felt long to our people because everything in the homes has been so interactive that even a 30-second, you got to understand, I'm a Lloyd Jones preacher, man. Like I've been in that guy's pulpit. My laptop right now is sitting on his pulpit Bible. I am a preacher. I read good preaching. I listen to good preaching. But I'm going to start changing up the format. What we would do occasionally, I think, is going to be normal for us, where what we do is we will still have worship like normal, but it'll be broken up. We have communion every week. We're a bit more liturgical on a few things. Church is called the Abbey, after all. And it's, you know, as a Free Methodist these days, cool thing about Wesley was he had what was called the Wesleyan Quadrilateral, which meant that everything went through four filters at one time for him. There was reason. There was scripture. Scripture was the top one. So I should list that one first. Scripture, reason, and then he would say tradition, but what he meant by that is things that we can learn from the people that went before us. And then the last one was experience, because remember, he got baptized in the Holy Spirit on Aldersgate. That was like his empowering for mission. So those four are what he always holds in balance. And so that's kind of the way that I have always thought. You know, but it just, you know, Wesley put language to it. But anyways, so, you know, we've got an open time, which is the experience, a little more charismatic. We've got the liturgical part, which is communion as a sacrament, not as, you know, just a, oh, you know, it's a symbol. No, it's a sacrament to us. We believe Jesus is actually giving himself to us as we take communion. That might be a fun podcast topic in future to talk about the difference between it as a symbol and a sacrament, two different things. And, but anyways, so I'm going to start doing 10 minutes of teaching and do it as like one point, and then 10 to 15 of discussion, and then 10 minutes of teaching. I'm going to break it up more is what I'm trying to say. And that's going to be an intentional experiment. Our church plant knows. We told them, hey, all this is an experiment this Sunday. Like we're not even worried. They know the three things, maxim that I always throw, only three things need to happen. We need to hear from God. God needs to hear from us, and we need to hear from each other. So they have that memorized now. I've been saying that for weeks. But the cool thing, and I haven't really shared this, but it kind of kicks us into today's topic a little bit, but I'll make the break. Don't worry. But just introducing a little bit, Ralph and Ruby Moore have decided to make it their church. In fact, he just bought a house up here, near me so he could be a part of the church plant. And man, I got to tell you, like,
so you're turning it over to him so you can move out here to Texas. Awesome. I got a great house in Plano that you can buy.
No, but you know, he came one Sunday and really liked it. And then he came the second time. And after the second time, because, you know, Bo's there, I'm there, Andrew's there. And we rotate, you know, who's going to preach. And he just said, you know, Peyton, I loved it when I came the first time, but the second time really confirmed it. There's no ego here. I just love this. Well, here's the thing, right? For me, you have a leader of that capacity where like 2,400 churches spawned out of his ministry. He's going to think things. He's going to have stuff to say. So every week he'll kind of take me aside and be like, hey, you know what we could do is boom, boom, boom. And like, I find myself thinking, this is incredible because like, that's a gift. That'd be like having Wesley, Lloyd-Jones, Spurgeon, someone in your pocket going, you know what you could do?
Right.
And so for me, it's been like, I just was marveling Sunday, like I have a mentor, like a legendary mentor here with me doing it. And he's not wanting to, like he did come up to me and because I'm always telling him, hey, you want to teach? And he's like, nope. And then Sunday we're in Philippians. He's like, you know, and I'm a one, or you know me, I'm a 1 to 3 verse preacher. I don't ever do a big long passage. And he goes, you know, when you get to these verses, I would like to take those. I love those verses. And they broke up and open to me, you know, not long ago. And I can't wait to have him preach at our church. I mean, what a lot of people don't know is Ralph was an incredible teacher. And so everyone knows him as like the level 5 multiplier. But he was actually an amazing communicator and preacher. So it's just kind of, it's neat, man. Like there's times I got to pinch myself. Like, is this really happening? Like I have Ralph stinking Moore, and Ruby's a baller in her own right. Like you just got to know they come as a pair, but it's neat, man. And it's a super big privilege. So, I keep just marveling that, almost knocked my drink over. Just keep marveling that we get that gift, man, of having them with us. So, yeah.
I love it.
Yeah. Kind of neat. Hey, before we get into the topic, quick announcement, you can buy Discipology, right now, and you can buy Journey to Disciple Making, which is the journal that goes along with it. You can, not quite yet, but soon you'll be able to go over to Through the Word and download the, Discipology Plan, which is like a little journey you take. It's like a devotion that teaches you how to make disciples in 28 days, gets you on the field actively for a few weeks after that. So, be sure to, check that out. But Discipology keeps hitting #1, Pete, in hardback and, Audible. It hit #1 in new releases. So
that's awesome.
Yeah, man. It's doing good. It ain't even out for, you know, another 3 weeks or so. So that's kind of cool. But, if you guys want to join my launch team, we're only taking 100 people. We would love to have you. I think we're about halfway to 100. And the commitment for that is that you buy, and if you're listening and you're like, I don't want to join your launch team, but, I would do this. What I need for people to do is to buy a copy on Amazon. You have to be, a verified purchaser for this to work. And I need you to leave a review some point, between getting the book and April 15th. It releases on March 17th. I need 100 reviews, and leave an honest review. I'm not asking you to leave me a 5-star. I don't want to manipulate any of that. But leave an honest review. And if it hits 100, and I think we're going to hit it, but I need help. I only hit it if people help like you. But if you ever think, man, I would love to do something for Peyton, I'm just asking you to buy the book on Amazon and leave me an honest review within the first 30 days of release. And that will bump it up into the 100 review algorithm, which then makes, that's when you start seeing it like, hey, people bought this and bought that, you know, like customers like you also like this. It just puts it in a whole new category. And if you guys would do that for me, I would be extremely grateful. If you do it, please email me. You can email New Breed. In fact, what I'll do is I'll give you Brooks. You can do, no, I won't do that. I'll do info. that way Brooks can go, hey, why'd you do that? But info@newbreedtraining.com. Send that in and we'll give you access into the book club, which is going to run for the next 10 months. We're going to take a chapter a month and go through it. It doesn't matter if you do Audible, but that'll be a live interactive. And it's right now, if you want to support the Discipology Project, if you donate $500 or more, you get in that book club. So that's a $500 value for you guys. If you want to be in a book club with me on my new book, again, there will be a limit to how many people can be in that. So if you want to get in it, be a verified purchaser and reviewer on Amazon, send that in to us at info@newbreedtraining.com and we will give you access to the book club.
I love it.
Yeah, man. Cool. All right. Well, guess what time it is?
Great Scott. It's time for this week's topic.
Let's get down to the nitty gritty.
You know, I loved it when they had Back to the Future in Fortnite.
Mm.
And so, like, now I leave the screen, the loading screen is, you know, Doc, Marty, the DeLorean. And of course, they got to put like a Peely in there because it's Fortnite. And that's, but that's my loading screen. And I'm wearing the shoes from the second movie, you know, the ones that,
you know, my Cybertruck looks enough like the DeLorean that that's why I bought it. The doors don't open like I want them to, like the DeLorean, but that is actually why I got a Cybertruck.
I like it.
Because it's like Back to the Future.
There you go.
It's pretty close to it. Yeah. It doesn't have a little food processor in the back, but.
Mr. Fusion?
Yeah, Mr. Fusion.
I love it.
All right. Well, the flex capacitor, I'm pretty sure it has a flex capacitor, but anyways. All right. Well, hey, today's topic is, and by the way, can I commend you on your Doc Brown voice? It was really good today. You dug deep for that one. That was one of your best.
I appreciate that. And I love it when you lie to me. It makes me feel so good.
No, I felt like it came from the diaphragm.
Okay. You want to hear something funny? I know we're supposed to be in the topic, but you just reminded me of this. So the pastor at my church, since we've been going there, you know, for 3.5 years, he's been trying to get me to give him a hug, right? Because he knows I don't like to hug people.
No, oh, he sounds cool already.
So every Sunday he's like, hey, bring it in. I'm like, pound it out, right? And he's like, I hate this whole poundy thing. It's so uncomfortable. I'm like, I don't care, pound it out. Like it. So
that's, you know, how bump, the, by the way, everybody.
So the, yeah, the fist bump. So the Facebook memories came up, and apparently my pastor in California texted me one Sunday. He goes,
oh no.
Hey, I forgot to say thanks for the hug or something like that. You know, the hug this morning, and put all these laughing emojis. And I replied back, hey, when the state tells me I can't do something, watch out. It's about to get real up in here, right? Because this is during COVID. And I'm like,
a hugging fiend. Huggy Bear, that was your nickname.
So I had to, that's right, I forgot you called him that. So I like sent that to my pastor on Facebook. I'm like, hey, just so you know, COVID made me a hugger, but we're not in COVID, or you know, something like that.
Yeah.
And it was funny because his reply to me was, he goes, you know what's funny about this is your messaging is on target. Like, that's been you. Like, you will only hug someone because the government told you can't do it.
Absolutely.
I'm like, yeah, that's me.
Don't tell Pete he can't do something. Well, yeah. So going back to all this.
My wife said I can't move to Texas. Look at me now.
How you like me now? Yeah. So getting back to our topic. So what we're going to talk about today.
Let's get down to the nitty gritty.
Yeah, that. We're going to talk about mentorship. And I, you know, some of it is sparked by having Ralph at the church because I have a mentor. And I guess that's what is really exciting to me. I always have a mentor in something. Like, I would say that Chris Langham is my mentor at Through the Word. because as much as I have preached, through the word is a different medium. And it actually takes a unique set of skills, which Chris is the master. Like, he is so good at that medium, and he'll train me and teach me and lead me in that. And, you know, grateful for that. But, you know, now I've got Ralph as a mentor, and I was just thinking, like, how many of the you as planners out there, you may not have active mentors. Now, this wasn't where this talk was going, but I actually happen to have 3 slots open in coaching, because I jettisoned all my coaching clients except for one during the writing of the book. And I'm now back. If you want, you can, I think you go to newbreedtraining.com/coaching and you'll find my coaching page, and you can, you know, contract a coach for a while if you want, and I'll be your mentor. But if you want a mentor, there are so many seasoned leaders out there who will lead you, guide you, and would be so blessed to pass on what they know. There are guys that are nearing the end of their ministry, and they're thinking, I have 50 years of experience with church splits, church politics, difficult people to lead, difficult boards, difficult, you know, elders, deacons, appointing the wrong person, having people, you know, carve off a portion of my church, people selling Amway in church, you know, dealing with psychological illnesses, dealing with gossip, man, all the stuff that you're going to face, you know, finances, like, when, at what part did you feel the church lost its soul? Like, they could tell you all of that stuff and walk you through that. And if you would, if you'd be willing to give some of your time for someone to pour into you, well, there's an idea. Then there are plenty of people that are willing and ready and able to do it. And, I could give you a host of names of people I know who are just doing their thing, but their heart is really for the next generation coming up. And I don't just mean like the Gen Zs, right? Like, most of you listening to this, I would imagine, are Gen X, right? And Gen Xers, we're kind of funny because
I don't know that that's true. I
think a lot of millennials listen. That's
I think it's because you and I are Gen X that we just kind of, you know, we're pushing our own beliefs onto our listeners. But the realistic,
it's true.
Because every time we hear from people, they're way younger than us.
That's true. Yeah. That now, is true. But, you now, know, that's now, what happens when you get older.
Let's be clear.
They don't have the muscles that we got.
You guys don't understand.
It's funny.
I was just flexing for Peyton there in the Zoom.
So for those of you that are Gen Xers, this is kind of why I started this podcast. Because Pete told me to. That is actually the real reason. But the reason why it seemed good to me is I didn't always ask for help. I think Gen Xers, we don't tend to ask for help that much. Because go back. I mean, we were, as Gen Xers, we were latchkey kids. So we got home, and what a latchkey kid was is you had a shoelace with your key on it. You know, because both your parents worked. And so you let yourself, you get off school and you walk home and then you would unlock your door and go inside and you would make food for yourself and you do whatever you did until about 6 o'clock when your mom and dad got home from work. So you had a number of hours where you just fended for yourself. You learned pretty quickly that there are consequences for your actions, like if you left the water running, or, you know, you left the gate open, or like no one was there to save you. No one was coming to help you. Like if you turned the stove on and started a fire, like you learned all that stuff pretty quick. So you didn't tend to ask for help because you just had to figure stuff out as a kid. And so for Gen Xers, as we got older, if you look at what a Gen Xer did, they just solve problems. They solve their own problems. They get it done. And they tend to figure stuff out. And if you work with Gen Xers, they're not going to ask you for help. It's very rare that they're going to ask you for help for something. So for me, I looked back and thought, man, I bet there's a lot of people like me out there and they're not going to ask for help. I think millennials, you guys that are millennials, you were better about not like, oh, that was the other thing. We never believed in being vulnerable, right? Like we were the last generation to know privacy. So we didn't put everything out on the internet and out in this. We're like, no, privacy means, you know, like, you don't tell people what you think. Like if you made a mistake, 10 people knew about it and they made fun of you for a week.
You don't share things like, hey, keep this between you, me, and the podcast audience. You'd never do
yeah.
that.
Yeah. Well, no, I mean, it's funny because you and I do a little bit of this, but there's a line of what we share that a millennial, 100%. This is, and I actually really like this about millennials, that millennials were okay with being vulnerable and weak out in public. And that, since I started working with millennials, it shocked me, but I admired it greatly because I thought, man, we just didn't do that. Like when you and I were growing up, right? Like, if we went to our parents with any kind of problem, like my stepdad was killing people in the jungles in Vietnam. He was like, oh, you think your life's tough, huh? So like, that's what you would hear back. Like they'd be like, oh, well, you know, I know that's sad that, you know, John's being a jerk at school right now, but you know, try losing 5 of your friends in enemy crossfire. And like, that's how it was, right? Like, yeah, my friend Johnny got pulled into a hole and we never saw him again, you know, by the Viet Cong. Like that was the kind of talk. I just remember like, it was like, yeah, you know, life sucks. It's tough, kid, you know, suck it up. And, and I think that's why our generation thinks that's so funny to say, suck it up, buttercup. That's like, that was like your and me's joke, like forever. Suck it up, buttercup. You know, like,
that's I still just funny feel that way.
Yeah. That's just funny to us. Like, that's a Gen X thing.
Hey, my mom just died. Suck it up, buttercup.
Yeah. Life's tough. Yeah. You know, like, my best friend died in my arms. You know, like, that's what we were growing up with. So all that to say, you know, like, mentorship did not come natural. When I first, I had people adopt me in church. My youth pastor became a mentor. And my whole generation came. That was the other thing about our generation is because of all of the divorce and the two working parents, almost all the families that I knew had divorced families. Like all of our parents got divorced. So, when I came to faith, almost my entire youth group was from broken homes. And my youth pastor was rad. Like he just became a dad to us and became a mentor. But the first mentor I reached out to, I got back from Wales on a, I think it was a Friday. And at 6 a.m. the next morning, Peter Jeffrey, who was Martin Lloyd Jones's protege, was preaching. And I had just inherited a church. of 600 people, Calvary Chapel, Huntington, it was called back then. It's now called Refuge. Some of you would know Bill Welsh. That was the guy who came in eventually. But for a year and a half, I pastored that as a young man of 22 to 23. And it grew to 1,000 people. But I was in way over my head. I'm like, I got this board of elders. They're all successful businessmen in Southern California. I've got this church. I'm not even married. And I got people coming to me for marriage counseling. It was crazy. And so I reached out to Peter Jeffrey because he, you know, in Wales in the UK, they're not celebrities. He just gave me his email address because I said, hey, and I just got back from Wales for 6 weeks and he was ministering in Wales. And I said, can I like ask you some questions? Because I think I want to go back and minister there. Can I keep in touch? So when I asked him for advice and mentorship, he wrote me back. And that changed the trajectory of my life. That guy's one letter changed everything. That's how I ended up at Lloyd Jones's church eventually, years later. Let's see, it was 1990, I want to say 94, maybe 95 when I wrote to him the first time. And 4 years later, four or five years later, I was in Wales. I had moved there. But that mentorship was so important. And the reason I say this is two things. Number one, many of you listening, You haven't valued yourself enough to allow someone to pour into you. You are pouring into a church plant. You are pouring into a congregation, and you've never taken the time to let someone invest in you. I don't know what your thoughts on that, Pete. What do you think about that?
I don't have any thoughts on that. You need to get to a point.
Yeah. Well, I mean, part of the reason I paused there is that you very much have this bone in you to pass on what you know. I remember when you started up the Bible Inner Circle. They're like, I can pass on what I know to some of these guys, right? And we saw people's lives change where they started making money. You know, you trained up a bunch of people to consult, you know, and you, I mean, you actually have a heart for this, you know?
Yeah. And, you know, I think one of the key differences, it was ironic because Vinny and I were talking about this yesterday, right? Because Vinny is obviously just killing it in real estate, doing phenomenal.
And he was in our group, right? I mean, he was no. part of that. Oh, he no. wasn't? He was just our Xbox group.
Yeah, that's it. You know, I became friends because I posted on Facebook saying, hey, anybody want to play with me in Fortnite or something like that? He's like, oh, you play? Like that. But I guess he wrote an article for New Breed or Church Planner Magazine or something like that back in the day. So, I mean, and he'd listen to the podcast and all that. But my point is you know, we're talking about this because he is doing so well and he wants to pass on to his team. Like, he wants to help them. He wants to mentor them. Hey, like, you guys can do this too. It's not rocket science. You know, let me show you how to do this. And unfortunately, the reality is that most people won't do it. Like, they won't take action. And that's, even for me, that's one of the things that always frustrated me. And one of the key differences, like, you and I started the Bivo Inner Circle, and then we had, what do we call it, like Platinum Inner Circle. And the Platinum was like the full, hey, guys, I'm going to teach you how to do what I do, and it's going to cost. And it's you know, it was like a $5,000 ticket to get into it. And the regular Bivo Inner Circle was like, I don't know, 100.
200 a month. It was 200 a month.
Yeah. 200 a month. Okay. I mean, it was $5,000 versus 200 a month, you know, night and day difference, right?
Right.
And it was ironic to me because looking back on it, I was like, okay, the guys who paid $5,000 had a much higher success rate. And I don't think it was because of the knowledge that was passed on. Yeah. I mean, maybe it was to a degree.
There's a skin in the game.
There's a different level of commitment, right? Yeah. Then I honestly, I can't think of anyone who really nailed it who was at the $200 a month level. And so, you know, when you talk about like, yeah, we want to share, but we also want people to take what we're sharing and implement. And most people aren't. And I don't know where, like, I don't know if you just got to be like cool with the fact that, look, my job is to share it. And I realize that, you know, a good 98% of the population are just not action takers. You know, and everyone likes to think they are until it comes time to actually working.
Oh, everybody imagines they're the best undiscovered entrepreneur in the world.
But not even just an entrepreneur, but like, you're relating it back to ministry. And I agree. Like, I think there's a level in ministry where people are like, yeah, look, if you mentor me, I'm going to do this. And then you're like, okay, well, these are the things you got to do. Whew, man, that's kind of tough. That's work. Yeah. That's, you know, I'm going to get rejected. I'm going to get this. I'm going to get that. And, you know, people are going to hate me and, you know, I'm making no money. And I mean, and it's like, yeah, that's the game, baby. That's the game. It's rough.
So when I showed Discipology to a group of young people and had them read through it, because I actually wrote Discipology for Next Gen, you know, because I felt like our generation, we focus on multiplication, church planting, the book of Acts, next generation needs to get it right and start with the gospels and what Jesus did. If we can make disciples, the next, you know, multiplication is going to be fine. But we skipped this step. And that's where, coming back to Ralph, I think Ralph always had that message and no one listened to him until recently. Like, when he got notoriety for being a level 5 multiplier, then people started paying attention to him. But this is the interesting thing, is that in Discipology, I bring out this very fact about the invitation and the deeper level of commitment. In year one, Jesus just like, come and see, just spend time with me. And he doesn't really pour into them yet. He just spends time. They get to know each other. He's made no promises. There's no investment other than just come with me. We'll go to Passover together. You know, they were going to go anyway, but they traveled together. Wedding of Cana in Galilee, invites them. They come. They spend time together. You know, it takes a few days. There's go to the synagogue with me on weekends. I'm preaching, but nothing other than just spend time together. In the second year, he says, he tells them the night before, I have to leave. And they're like, oh, why does he got to go? It's the day he heals Peter's mother-in-law, casts a demoniac out of the guy in the synagogue. Like, it all kicks off that Sunday or that Saturday. So the next day is a Sunday and the guys are out fishing. And that's where Jesus, you know, first they find him praying. It's actually in the morning, early in the morning. And that's when he says, I have to go. And he says, for, you know, I've been called to preach the gospel in these other cities. For this reason, I've come. And then the miraculous catch of fish later on, when they go out fishing. And then when they come back, he says, cast your net on the other side. You know, they can't haul the fish in. And that's when Jesus, Peter says, depart from me. I'm a wicked and sinful man. And Jesus says, you follow me and I'll make you a fisher of men. Like, he makes this promise. This is what I will do for you, but the commitment is higher. You have to follow me. And what he meant was he was leaving on his tour of Galilee. And if they were going to be mentored by, they would have to leave their nets, which it says that's what they did. They become his Talmudim, which is the word for rabbinical disciples. And they follow him like you would follow any rabbi. They would never get a shot like that in their entire life. But because Jesus invited them and up to the commitment. And I brought that up. When I brought it up with young people, like, that was the most powerful part, because if you just take it upon yourself, like if I just start all of a sudden deciding I'm gonna mentor Pete Mitchell for ministry, and I don't tell you, I'm this annoying guy that just keeps telling you what you can and can't do and giving you advice, and you're like, dude, shut up. Like, that's unbidden advice. I didn't ask you into my life to do this. The difference is with this, that deeper level, it has to be a contract. It's like a social contract, like what we did with the Bible Inner Circle. You pay this money. You meet with us from these times to these times, and we will do this for you, right? Mentorship or disciple making, it has to be the same. You can't just decide you're going to disciple people without their permission. And Jesus models that. And in the third stage, he
just to reiterate, without the money part, like, you're not saying people got to pay you to be
no.
Right, I want to make sure that message got.
Jesus did it for free, but it definitely cost them.
Right.
I mean,
that's the thing. Everything costs, right?
It costs. So if you want someone to pour into you, it's going to cost you. So, like, this is one of the things I really learned from you was don't show up late. Don't show up late. Because for you, like, you're like, dude, if I'm going to help you, like, if I'm going to do stuff, you got to be here on time. Like,
well, it's showing respect.
That's it.
And so when you don't show up on time or don't communicate, you're disrespecting the person who's taking time out of their, like I said before, like, I can make money doing the stuff myself. So if you're not going to take my stuff seriously, I don't need you. You need me. Like, that's the way it is. So
yeah,
show up.
Well, and that's it. Like, if someone is going to mentor you, you have to show up on time and you cannot flake on them. Like, that is a big no-no. If you flake on a guy who is mentoring you or a gal who's mentoring you, they're not going to take you serious. They're going to think right away, you don't value this. And they will literally pull back. Because there are just some, like, once-in-a-lifetime shots that you have. I can think back to some mentors I did pay, like Bob Logan. Remember when we were first starting the podcast, we would interview all these church planners. And we're like, well, who trained you? And they'd be like, Bob Logan. So I went and paid Bob Logan $300 a month to train me how to train, because he was a legend. He asked me in the first day, what do you want me to train you to do? Like, what do you want out of this? What do you want to accomplish? I said, I want to be the next Bob Logan. Now, I wasn't wanting to be the Bob Logan so that Peyton could have fame and notoriety. I was already doing at that point. I'd already written books. But I knew this guy had trained a generation. And I was like, I want to learn from him. There's things he knows I don't know. And he's pioneered this. Like, he's a legend. Like, I need to learn from him. And there's so many more things. Like, he founded coach.net, all the ministry coaching. Like, he was great. And when I told him that, it was really funny because he kind of like laughed and guffawed a bit. Like, no one had ever said that to him. And I said, dude, you're a legend. Like, I feel like I'm coming up in your space. Like, I might be the next generation's Bob Logan, and I need you to mentor me because you did this before it was cool. You did it before anyone else. And so it was money well spent, brother. It was such a good, like, that changed my life as well. I wouldn't be doing a lot of what I did if it weren't for him. And I could just go back, you know, Todd Wilson from Exponential is mentoring me right now in things. You need mentors. You need mentors. And the flip side is, and this is where I was hoping to get, but maybe we'll get there next week. A few months ago, we talked about you mentoring, and many of you heard that, but you still haven't put it into practice. So I think you always need someone mentoring you, and you always need to be mentoring the person behind you. So maybe we pick that up next week, but that's it. That's all I got.
Yeah. Well, I know you're out of time, but I'm going to finish up with this. One of the things that I thought really amazed me was after Charlie Kirk was killed, it started coming out all these mentors that he had that he would ask, hey, I want you to mentor me. The guy, I can't remember his name, Frank something or other, Turk or something like who was his apologetics mentor. And he's like, you know, I'm going to pay you. And he had someone that would mentor him. But he always was like, look, I want you to mentor me. I'm going to pay you. Train me. Like, I want to be great at being able to debate people and stuff like that. And I just remember looking at that going, okay, that is a quality you don't see in many people where they're like, look, I want this. I will do what it takes. You want me to pay? You want me to give you my time? Whatever it is, great. And then he would take it and he would use it. And that's kind of, I mean, I'm not trying to, it's not about the political side of things. I just, because I remember hearing about that with his apologetics mentor. And I was like, it explains why he could always like have a verse on the top of his head. Like, it was like he'd already gone down this path so many times and with his mentor, you know, like let's really understand this stuff so that way when these questions come up, I can explain it. It's kind of like when I watch all these reels on Instagram, and a lot of them are a couple of different dudes who debate Muslims. And I'm like, man, they understand the Quran, they understand the Bible, they understand the history, they understand the Council of the Nicaea, like they understand all this stuff. And they're able to debate them and like show them where they're in error. And it's almost like, you know, how Paul said, hey, you know, you gotta study this stuff, you know, let's get ready for this. And I'm like, man, that's what we need. So we need people who are willing to invest in themselves so they can have these conversations with people.
Yeah. Yeah. And not only that, brother, like they have learned, you know, like in debates, like they've learned what mistakes to avoid,
right?
How you get trapped, you know, they can give you this insider wisdom, that only experience. Like, you're not going to read a book and you'll get some stuff out of books for sure, but there's a different level of someone hearing your situation and your problems and teaching you situational leadership out of that, applying their wisdom and expertise to what you were going through in the moment. A book can't provide the same degree of that pinpointed, laser focused accuracy and wisdom into your situation. That's the value of it. And, you know, you don't need it every day, but when you come together and do that, you know, I have one client where after meeting 1 month, and I'm not here to sell coaching today, but after meeting 1 month, he was like, I need to do this twice a month. And so he's my twice a month client. You know, that's the only one that I kept. So anyways, guys, thank you so much for joining us today. When you're doing all that mentoring, Pete, how do you take care of all your finances?
You know, it's funny you should ask, because I was actually talking with Josh Henry this week via email. I use SimplifyChurch.com.
SimplifyChurch.com? Pete, what is that?
SimplifyChurch.com is a great service that takes care of all my church's accounting and bookkeeping, and they can do all that stuff, so I'm freed up to get mentored or to mentor others.
Nice. Well, definitely check out SimplifyChurch.com from the sound of what Pete's saying, and let them mentor you in bookkeeping. And Pete, with that, we're done. Sign us out, buddy.
And remember, if you want to reach the ones that nobody's reaching, you need to go where nobody's going and do what nobody's doing.
If you like what Pete just said, press one now.
Only Gen X will understand.